Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
We just moments ago finished a conversation with Mark Janoff, the plaintiff in the case. 5-4, the Supreme Court has ruled that a state of Illinois employee or any public sector employee does not have to be a member of a union if they don't want. They don't have to pay those dues. So we'll talk about that with him in just a minute. You got a thumbs up for me? All right. Anthony Kennedy, is going to retire from the Supreme Court.
That's what we're hearing.
A little less drama would be nice.
I know. We've got a lot going on today.
Rokan said yesterday at the beginning of his show, that's how he starts most of his thoughts. And then he went, you know, it would be nice if I didn't have to just... And then he starts to percolate, and he does that for 4 hours. And I said the same thing. I said, if you even love this president and you like the direction our country is going right now, you'd probably like a break, too. Just a break, just a breather. Just give us a, okay, now nothing serious or silly or crazy is going to happen for 48 hours. I would pay money for that.
But we have a 24-hour news cycle.
Boy, it sure does seem like that. We just keep feeding the beast. Okay, so Mark Janoff, the Illinois public employee, he works for Family Services. He's a child advocate, and he still works in that capacity, by the way. Joined us just moments ago from our nation's capital.
I'm in Washington, D.C.
You are the man of the hour. America is talking about Mark Janoff in this Supreme Court ruling. How do you feel today?
I'm elated. I'm excited. This is just a fantastic victory for, public sector workers across the country in the 22 states that have been forced to pay these union fees. And now they have the choice to say, no, I don't want to anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have to anymore.
Yeah. I understand that. That's your view, clearly, and it is the view of the Supreme Court. But you must also agree that a lot of people aren't going to be happy about this either. The dissenting judges and the people that worry that as union members, they're now not going to have the bargaining power, not going to have the pay and benefits that they used to have too, right?
Well, the point that I always make is that they chose to at least in the state of Illinois, mandate this collective bargaining. The unions asked for and received this ability to collective bargain for everyone. So it was their decision, to go that route. And the fact that I chose to say, look, I'm don't want to be a part of that. I don't like some of the policies. I don't have to speak to you and your listeners about the terrible financial state that the state of Illinois is in. And it was the point that I just couldn't put up with it anymore.
Yeah,
I just felt that it was just plain wrong.
What was your motivation then? I mean, we've heard about the $45 participation fee you had to pay. Did that bother you, or was it more the fact that you felt you were subsidizing bad politics by the union and the state?
Well, I felt part of it was the politics. It wasn't so much the actual dollar amount, but it was the politics and a lot of the other policy decisions that the unions have made over the years that I funded. Or I believe I funded, because we actually can't get a real accounting of where my money went. And so therefore, that caused, some consternation in my consciousness as to, why am I doing this? And why am I forced into this particular situation that I don't care to participate in?
If you had been persuaded, though, that your money wasn't going to forward the union's political agenda, it wasn't helping the Democratic Party, but it was really just going for wages and benefits and the things that union members enjoy, would you have been behind this suit still?
I think I'd have to look and see in a more detailed manner. I can't make a blanket statement on that. I would need more information.
But the motivating force wasn't, again, the $45 so much as it was you felt it was bad politics.
I think it was that because, see, here in the case of Illinois and the other states, if I was a private entity such as a small business or a corporation or whatever, like Caterpillar, and I approached the government in the way that the union does, that'd be considered lobbying. well, why is it that that's considered lobbying, but what the union does is not? And then there really is, quite frankly, no differentiation in my mind.
Do you worry that the consequence will be lower wages for people, poorer benefits for state workers?
I don't believe so, no. I think that's another myth, you know, that the unions are putting out there that they're trying to use to make their point, but I don't see it.
Well, wages are going down across the state and across the country. The wages are higher in Illinois than in Wisconsin and Indiana, which don't have union representation the way we do in this state. Where unions, I know you know all of this, but where unions tend to exist, wages tend to be higher. So I can understand why people would be apprehensive about the consequences of this in terms of their pocketbook.
Well, but let's look at it, the state of Illinois and the fact that what did we have approximately a year ago? We had a 32% tax increase, correct? So if, you know, some of that is going to support these higher wages and benefits that the union keeps asking for, where is the individual worker really coming out ahead? Sure, they might get more pay, but then they've got to pay that into, you know, taxes and personal property taxes and fortunately not any longer, but the soda tax in Cook County there, things of that nature. Where does this all balance out?
Mark Janis is on the phone line. He is the plaintiff in this case. The Supreme Court decided 5-4 in favor of, that is, they've struck down the Illinois law that requires non-union workers to pay fees that go to collective bargaining. What do you think is going to happen, Mark?
Well, I that has yet to be seen. I think we're going to have to just wait and see how this all falls out. The decision is only several hours old, and I think we'll just have to keep, you know, working day to day to see how this is all going to fall out and where we're going to go next.
Do you hope that employees get more money down the road? I mean, I presume you don't want to see your fellow workers at the state lose as a result of this, right?
No, I wouldn't want to see that. But on the other hand, I think there's a lot of other issues within the contract, you know, such as seniority rights, overtime, and things of that nature that I think really need to be looked at and, you know, brought more into line and being a little bit more neutral versus stacked.
Well, you don't sound like a union advocate at all or an employee. I mean, if the other side agrees to terms that are favorable to the employees in the union, I don't know why you should concern yourself with that or should protest that.
Well, it's a matter of now that I've got the choice to make my own decision, and that's really what this whole
right. So, what would you do then? So, I mean, if are you still working as an employee for the state of Illinois?
Yes, sir.
You're going to go back to work tomorrow or the next day? Have you been working
all
along?
I'll be going back to work Monday.
You think they're going to have a big welcome back Mark sign out front?
I doubt it. I really do.
And do
I don't know what they'll do. Quite frankly, we'll just have to wait and see.
And so then you, I presume, I guess it'll remains to be seen how quickly this gets enforced, if you will. But you're going to save $54 a paycheck or something like that too. Is that right?
Correct. Right. Something along that line.
And then you're not a member of the union, but you just have to pay that $54. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. It comes right out of my paycheck as a line item called union dues.
And then do you worry that the state could say, hey, listen, since you're not protected by the collective bargaining agreement, we no longer have to pay you what the wage was previously? Do you think that we should separate those two groups? Those that are in the union can bargain for whatever they want. But if you're not in the union, as you have not been, you should not benefit from the contract. Do you want to negotiate your terms separately?
Oh, I think I can. Sure, I've done it before in the private sector and previous jobs I've had. But you have to remember, John, that currently under Illinois law, I'm still going to be covered under that collective bargaining agreement.
I know that.
The unions asked for.
Right, but,
but that will not change.
Would you feel the same way if, in fact, you were completely and entirely on your own?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And you understand that question applies not just to you, but to all of those employees in the state now. If they don't want to be in a union, they can be on their own and takes their chances, right?
Right, exactly. And it's up to the individual to make that choice. And it's also up to the unions to then be much more transparent, you know, in what is going on in the bargaining area and what is actually happening, which I at times feel that we're not getting the full story. We're not getting the truth in many of these areas.
And if unions became more transparent and were able to and became maybe more efficient and were able to strike good deals, more power to them. You're not anti-union in that sense, are you?
No, absolutely not. I feel that if someone wants to be a member of the union, they should have that right.
Do you imagine a scenario where you would go back and join the union if it was, you thought, more in your interest?
Well, it's possible, but I can't say that right now because, you know, I haven't seen anything yet that would want me to become a member of the union at present.
One last question. I just am really curious about how you'll be received by fellow employees. The Sun-Times says this is a crushing blow for labor and it's bad for your fellow employees. And
you have to remember, John, that the unions own the Sun-Times.
I understand that's a point they admit in their. I understand that, and it's a point they acknowledge. But the statistics are that employees of unions, employees that are in unions, make more money and enjoy better benefits than those who are not. And this makes it more difficult for unions to collectively bargain. It diminishes their power. I wonder how the employees of the state of Illinois are going to receive this.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, won't we? Because we don't know, because that hasn't been decided at this point.
Are you really happy? You must be elated.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah, we've been working on this, strategizing, and I'm elated to finally have a conclusion. We've been here since Monday, no decision, Tuesday no decision, of course, finally today. And finally having a conclusion and a final decision of this is just absolutely wonderful.
Mark Janis, I so appreciate your time. Congratulations to you and your team. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and say hello to Thomas Jefferson for me. He was an advocate. If you look at some of his writings, he was an advocate for my side. So I think that's important to mention that.
He's going to join me on stage in August of this year. How about I get you tickets to the show and we let you and him spar labor law, okay?
Oh, I'd be definitely like to see that presentation. I'm a big fan of his, and I think that would be very interesting. I'm not necessarily sure I want to spar with him, but I sure would like to be able to hear what he has to say.
Thanks again, Mark Janis. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I kind of would like to hear that. I think that would be fun if Thomas Jefferson takes a couple of questions from
Mark Janis.
Or yeah. Mark Janis takes a couple of questions from Thomas Jefferson.
Wow, what a day.
Meanwhile, Justice Anthony Kennedy, who is a swing vote. I mean, he was appointed by Reagan.
He's the swing vote.
And is a conservative, but is a conservative who will vote with the Democrats as often as any of the other four. So now you're going to get a harder line on the Supreme Court. Wouldn't it change today's ruling, but how about that?
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, Kennedy has tended to be the vote that could go either way. He certainly went toward the Republican majority much more often than he did the Democrat. I don't want to say Democratic minority, but toward one block rather than the other. And this will give Donald Trump another choice. You know, this just goes back to, and I don't know how the Democrats might have handled it differently. I don't know if they should have marched in the streets, but the Merrick Garland thing is, well, you know, I just wondered when we're dead 50 years, John, if they look back on the history of this country and how it moved in a different direction, better or worse, I don't know, but in a different direction because Mitch McConnell refused to bring up Merrick Garland for a nomination.
That was an appointment that by all rights was Barack Obama's.
By every right.
And the Senate said we're not going to do it until after we get Donald Trump in office.
Well, they said they're not going to do it until the next president was elected. When they started not doing it, they didn't know who was going to be the Republican
nominee. Well, they
nominee.
Had nothing to lose. I mean, right. If Hillary wins, then they get another Democrat.
But Antonin Scalia died in his sleep, and they kept the vacancy open. I think it was for more than a year. And there was outrage, but there wasn't the movement or the, you know, Mitch McConnell never really faced mass opposition. I don't know if there might have been marching in the streets would have changed it or not, but I mean, it was an unprecedented move and man, a wily move on his part, that is certainly going to pay off for conservatives. The funny thing is, and this wasn't my observation, but I think it was John King on CNN pointed out, you know, Mitch McConnell doing that has allowed for one of the biggest victories for Donald Trump. Donald Trump's base hates Mitch McConnell.
Hmm.
Think of that.
Yeah, well, it's funny how these alliances are formed and then torn up and then come back again.
Well, we'll see. There will be...
Donald Trump has been able to insult and say horrible things about any and everybody, and then eventually they come around. And then they come around again.
Right.
And then they come around. Mitt Romney is now his best friend. And Rubio and the rest of them have all kind of fallen into line again.
Lindsey Graham will be come and go with his opposition.
Listen, Kennedy is 81 or 82. I just saw it. 82
81,
years,
I think,
81
yeah.
years old. He has a right to his life. And if he thinks, you know, I'm not going to be on this earth for another 81 years, I want to stop reading and working and concentrating. I'm not enjoying it. That's his obligation. I think a lot of us think that Supreme Court justices are asked to serve too long anyway. That is, until they want to retire. It's an appointment for life. So I respect his desire to get off of the bench if he so chooses.
Well, I mean, what do you want him to do?
I want him to wait until the next election.
But, okay,
and even
and
though
that's 3 years from now.
I know that. So it's a rock and a hard place. But I think that even a conservative justice must look at the sort of rocky lay of the land and think it would be better if we had the status quo. It would be better if we had at least what we have now and not more of the crazy. And as a swing vote, he was a moderating force. And I appreciate his desire to do what he wants. But wow, fella.
Get another secretary. Get some help.
I know. What do you need? What do you need?
The other
what
thing do you to, need? The other thing to look at
work
is...
Work from home.
You're going to have a very young core of Republican-appointed, I'll say, justices.
When you're going to have a have a conservative court for the rest of your life, is what you're going to have.
Well, you know, Chief Justice Roberts certainly has ruled in a way that's disappointed conservatives from time to time.
A couple of times.
But you've got Roberts, you've got Alito, you've got Gorsuch, and you will have this next person having been appointed. And I would imagine the next person will be fairly young as well. Justice Clarence Thomas is the oldest of that crowd.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He might be, you know, I don't know who will be next to go.
Okay, that's the latest. We're late for a break, but we've started the show with a conversation with Mark Janis, who was happy and in Washington, D.C., celebrating the fact that the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in his favor. And on the heels of that, while that was running, it was announced that Anthony Kennedy is going to retire from the Supreme Court. So Mark Janis said, I'd like to talk to Thomas Jefferson about this. We're going to invite him. I really am. I think that'll be fun. I think Pat Quinn, former governor of Illinois, might be there. And I'm going to invite Congressman LaHood and Congressman Krishnamurthy. Krishnamurthy. I hope he's not listening right now. Because
Raja.
I consider him a friend. We're going to invite them all.
Steve, right? Were you invited?
No, I don't think there's room now.
Hey, if you got, $20, there's plenty of room.
Definitely not room.
Violetta, were you invited? I know.
Violetta, you may have to introduce me on stage, so you may get a couple of freebies.
Okay.
Hey, listen, here's how you get tickets. 312, no, that's my phone number to call. Don't call that. Just go to WGNradio.com/events. WGNradio.com/events. Our conversation with Mr. Jefferson will take place on Saturday, August 18th at the College of DuPage. It will be remarkable. Your texts include, hey, that guy, Mark Janis, John, is a very selfish person. 815, who paid for Janis's plane ticket to D.C.? How much is Rauner paying him to stab his coworkers in the back?
I do wonder if he's on state time while he's there.
From 262, we are now living under the heel of fascism. I presume that's more about Justice Kennedy retiring. Did Mark Janis belong to the union to get his job, John? And once he received the job, then decided he didn't want to pay union dues? He describes it in a first-person piece in the Tribune not that long ago as he took the job and noticed that dues were deducted from his paycheck. He didn't like that. But he has been a, against his own will, dues-paying member of the union, and today is one. John, will union workers now be able to sue the union for back dues? That has not been addressed yet. Our contracts, John, this from a union teacher, cover how we are evaluated, processed for evaluation, and the outcomes of the evaluations, the planning periods, the class sizes, the list goes on. John, by protecting the teachers, you protect the students. That's the value of the unions.
It struck me that he didn't want to be part of the union because Illinois was in such bad shape, right?
Yep.
But he's willing to work for Illinois government.
Yep. Well, what's the problem with that?
Well, it's the government that's put it in such bad shape.
Well, what, do you want him to quit? He's an advocate for kids.
Okay, I know, but I mean, it just struck me as odd, as unusual.
Then I'm not tracking because he works for the state.
Right. He said, but the state's in such bad shape, so why would I want to participate to the union?
Right.
Because the state, so if the state is in such bad shape, then why would he want to work for state government? Why, you see what I'm saying?
No, not at all.
He wants to stay away from one because it's in such terrible shape, why wouldn't he stay away from the other? The state government is actually the thing that is responsible for being in such bad shape.
I wonder what it's going to be like when he goes back to the office on Monday. And, you know, it's not like this decision is not a surprise, and I don't think his fellow employees can hold him personally responsible for this. If it wasn't Mark Janus, it would have been somebody else. Somebody else could have made this case. Illinois has some of the highest union representation among its public employees in the country. The percentages are, I know, Ella, 15% of employees in Chicago. 15% of all of us are members of a union, and 53% of us in the public sector, 53%, are still members of a union. The news is next on WGN. On a phone line is Rick Barrett. He writes about manufacturing and the Harley-Davidson business, motorcycles, for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's been patiently waiting on a line. We appreciate your time, Rick. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Is it true that Harley-Davidson and nearby Milwaukee and Wisconsin is going to move some of its manufacturing to Europe as a result of the tariff situation?
Yeah, well, what's actually happening here is that Harley-Davidson is going to be moving production of the motorcycles that would have gone to the European Union and moving that production to its factories in India, Brazil, and perhaps Thailand. So, in other words, the bikes that would have been made here in the U.S., are probably going to be made in one of those other three locations,
right,
and then sent to the European Union.
Yeah, thereby sort of getting around the tariff that the European Union has put up against stuff coming out of the United States.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's a work around the tariffs.
Yeah, and is that a direct result? I mean, do these things happen that quickly? That would seem to me like that would take something that would take years to ramp up. Were they planning on doing this all along, or did it just happen?
You know, that's a really good question. They've had the plants in India and Brazil for quite a few years. Those actually go way back. And the motorcycles made in those plants are assembled from parts that come from the U.S., and then they're shipped to other countries, mostly in Asia. The plant, the Thailand plant, isn't open yet. That's going to be coming later this year. You know, and the motorcycles that are shipped from the U.S. to Thailand have like a 60% tariff on them. So it's really steep. That's why Harley-Davidson wants a plant in Thailand, and they can use that as a jumping-off point to other Asian countries.
Wow.
So, has this been in the works for a while? Yeah, kind of. I mean, Harley-Davidson has been making these bikes outside of the U.S. for a while.
But at least the 25% tariff is new.
Yeah, it is. The tariff from the European Union, the 31%, that's brand new. And that's a very big deal because Harley-Davidson, about 16% of its new motorcycles are sold in Europe. And that's been a growth market for them. It's second only in revenue to the U.S., so it's an important marketplace for them. That tariff could cost them $100 million a year, or roughly $2,200 per motorcycle, if they don't find a workaround.
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean in terms of your state, Wisconsin, in terms of jobs or revenue?
Very good question. In terms of jobs go, we don't know yet. Wisconsin and Milwaukee specifically, they make the engines for the motorcycles. The actual bikes themselves are assembled in York, Pennsylvania, Kansas City, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Will it take some jobs from here? It could. We just don't know yet. It's too early to say.
It's funny, though, because I still remember the image of those beautiful Harleys on the White House lawn with Mike Pence and Donald Trump standing there with them, and everybody was glad handing each other What's been the reaction with your governor and with the people in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the reaction is all over the place. And it's largely divided on political lines. If you're a Trump supporter, you know, you're probably going to go that way. And yet other people will say, you know, they're Harley-Davidson supporters, and they understand that the company has to find some kind of workaround these tariffs that have been imposed by the European Union. So, you know, again, the reaction is really widespread, but I think a lot of people are sympathetic to Harley-Davidson in this case.
Yeah, I don't blame them for that. Now, and I don't know that you follow this sector that much, but what's that big nail company that said, I think it's in Missouri, they might not be in business by the end of the summer because the steel they use to make the nails is imported, and with the tariff that we have on imported steel, it's going to make it impossible for them to produce the nails at a competitive price.
Yeah, and that's true for a lot of manufacturers. And, you know, not defending Harley-Davidson's decisions here, but, you know, they're also going to get hit by the steel and aluminum prices that have gone up, too. So manufacturers overall are really feeling the increased prices on the raw material side of things.
I wonder if the people that support the president throw up their hands and say, well, I'm willing to take the hit. Yep, that's the way it's going to be when you play a trade war. Maybe my milk or cheese or, I don't know, some other product is going to be less expensive. Maybe there'll be a trade and in the long run I'll be okay, but if it's going to hurt me first, I'm willing to pay that price because I'm a Trumpster. Do you hear something like that from people?
Yeah, I mean, there is some of that, but then there's also the workforce out there at Harley-Davidson, and a lot of those guys are Trump supporters, and, you know, they feel as if, like, Harley-Davidson is just kind of pulling the rug out from underneath them, that it's using these tariffs as an excuse to move production offshore.
That's interesting. So, I mean, so who betrayed them, right? The company or the president? But either way, it's not good for them, right?
Either way, it's not good for them. I mean, there are folks in Kansas City that work at that plant. That plant is going to be closed at some point in the near future. And, you know, they're saying some of that work will be sent offshore. And, you know, they're very angry about that.
Rick Barrett writes about this sector for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's just up the road. Hey, Rick, thanks for your time. I know you had to wait a little bit. We had some breaking news with Justice Kennedy and that Supreme Court decision about unions here, so I'll ask you to join us another day, but this has been very helpful.
Thanks so much for calling me. I appreciate it.
You betcha, sir. Thank you. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel up there.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
I think we're thinking big thoughts. It's just had a button turned down. It's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3. We are here on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. We've got a podcast called The Mincing Rascals. We think it's pretty swell on social media. I'm WGN King John. I want to be king someday, but the paperwork is tied up in Cook County. Thomas Jefferson knows I feel that way, and he likes to chide me about that sometimes. I'm going to be on stage with Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States and author of Your Declaration of Independence, Saturday, August 18th, College of DuPage. Do you have your tickets yet? I think this is going to be one of our most interesting shows, particularly since I think we now have a special guest lined up, Mark Janus, the plaintiff in this Supreme Court labor ruling.
Why didn't you go for Justice Kennedy, too, now? I mean, he's a player in all this, and he's done for a while.
Well, if he says this, he's invited.
Say hello to Thomas Jefferson for me. He was an advocate. If you look at some of his writings, he was an advocate for my side, and so I think that's important to mention that.
He's going to join me on stage in a couple of in August of this year. How about I get you tickets to the show and we let you and him spar labor law? Okay.
Oh, I'd be definitely like to see that presentation. I'm a big fan of his, and I think that would be very interesting. I'm not necessarily sure I want to spar with him, but I sure would like to be able to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, then we'll ask. Hey, Mr. Jefferson, what do you think about this Supreme Court ruling? Hey, Mr. Jefferson, what do you think should happen to people who don't want to pay the union dues? Should they get the same deal? This is where the story has to go now. If you don't have to pay union dues, and you not right now you do. You don't have to pay all of them, but you have to pay some. For instance, If you ask Mark Janis today, are you in the union? He will say, no, I'm not. But I still have to pay a portion of the union dues, and I get the benefits of the union.
Because in the old days, the you would be like Mark Janis and say, look, I don't like AFSCME. They give to Democratic candidates. I'm not a Democrat. I don't want to have my money going toward Democratic candidates.
Right.
So then they peeled that off, and they said, okay, you don't have to do that, but you still are responsible to pay a fraction of that for the work that the union does on your behalf in collective bargaining. So arguably, your money wasn't going to the J.B. Pritzker campaign.
Right.
Was going only to the negotiating table.
What do you think of that, Steve? I think that's a bunch of bunk. I mean, listen, I've been arguing on behalf of, because I don't know, I think my disposition is to be the devil's advocate. And it's annoying sometimes, I know. But I understand where you would say, wait a minute. So I'm only paying a fraction of the dues, and that goes to my compensation, and that goes to benefits that I get, and safety issues, and representation, stuff like that. But it's not going to the political arm of the union. Well, that's just a shell game. They have so many bills they got to pay, and if I'm paying these bills, they'll transfer that money and pay those bills.
Well, the money's not a different color, so they, you know, they,
it's all
they
green.
Can't distinguish it that way. You're right.
I think I'm subsidizing the Democratic Party either way.
But you could argue that you are benefiting from the union negotiating, and so you should participate in the cost of doing that. So then the idea is just settling on the amount, I guess.
If I may, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of texts like this. John, maybe if the unions did not donate mainly to Democratic politicians. This one says, I work for AFSCME and I get paid less than almost any county employee with the same job in Illinois. I would vote to drop my union in a second.
Does that mean in other states or in the county? Because I think if you look at how Illinois workers, we think they're grossly overpaid.
Yeah.
Did you ever look it up? Because I don't think that they are if you look at the national averages.
Yeah, I have the Chicago Tribune had five things you need to know about this story today. And the Sun-Times had, a really well-worded editorial. And as Mr. Janis pointed out to us, remember, the Sun-Times is owned by the unions, so of course they're going to have a partisan view, but that doesn't change. So sure, let's get the partisan view here. And in part in their editorial online right now, they say this. In a country where workers' wages have remained largely flat for more than three decades, even as company shareholders' dividends and executive paychecks have soared, collective bargaining by organized labor remains one of the few checks on dangerously growing income inequality. Unionized workers earn more. The typical union worker in 2014 was paid $970 a week, compared with $763 for non-union workers. Unionized workers typically enjoy better benefits, including health insurance and retirement accounts. There's no denying that unions tend to lift all boats. The better pay and benefits negotiated by unions become the standard for compensation for non-union workers. Our nation is nearly full employment right now, yet 40% of the workforce is paid less than $15 an hour. Think about that. Grown men and women are working two and three jobs to support their families. The average CEO now earns 339% more than the average worker. The average CEO in the United States is paid four times more than the average CEO in the world's top 21 economies. The rich are getting richer. Donald Trump promised that a big tax cut for corporations would result in bigger paychecks for workers. That has not happened. Rank-and-file workers are being left behind, real wages stagnating since 1980. In the past year, if in a continuation of this sorry trend, median real wages in the United States grew only 0.2%, but the average pay for employees in the top 5% went up 1.5%, 0.2 to 1.5. And the statistics go on like that. The rich are getting richer. There's a lot of jobs out there. They do not pay well.
I personally think a lot of that, I think a lot, and I've made this point on the business lunch, I think there's merit to a lot of that. I mean, the problem is if when you start defending unions, then you have to start defending the worst of them. And there's been a lot of bad behavior on the part of union bosses. A lot of them are in prison. I mean, it's absolutely a given. But I also think that the lessening of influence of unions across the country has led to this increased pay gap. I just think it has. You know, we keep talking about the economy doing better and wages should be increasing. Well, they're not. And I think one of the reasons is because there aren't as many collectives forcing employers to pay them more.
Yeah.
But if you run a business, you're going to pay, by and large, the least amount you need to pay in order to keep your workers. If there's leverage to increase the pay, the pay is going to go up.
Well, do you know how I'm going to decide which guy I'm going to vote for governor now? I've pretty much come down to, I think, the most rational decision. I've been able to come up with this smart choice because I watch a lot of television. And I've been looking at the commercials. I have decided that I am going to vote for the guy with the fewest toilets in his house. If you have a lot of toilets, and therefore a lot of bathrooms, and therefore a lot of house, I'm not going to vote for you.
Are you only going to count one house per candidate, or are you going to count all houses?
Let's start with this commercial.
Chicago's porcelain prince of tax avoidance, J.B. Pritzker. Pritzker spent millions on his second Gold Coast mansion, then took out the toilets. To dodge hundreds of thousands in property taxes, Pritzker removed every single toilet from his multi-million dollar second home and claimed it as uninhabitable. A royal flush of tax avoidance. Porcelain Prince J.B. Pritzker.
You get it? He's a porcelain prince. You get it? He has so many toilets, according to this television commercial, that they lined him up in his yard, and he was just sitting there reading the newspaper because there were just toilets everywhere. He has thousands of toilets, that J.B. Pritzker. He has so many toilets, he doesn't know what to do with them. So that looks bad. Here's what it's like for Governor Rauner, however.
Bruce Rauner owns 9 homes, and he's appealed his property taxes 22 times. But now he's attacking someone else for the same thing? Now that's bad. But you know what's worse? Bruce Rauner wants to raise your property taxes. That's right. Rauner's budget costs property taxpayers more than $1 billion.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. So he's got 9 houses. And I'll bet he's got, what would you guess, toilet per house? 3? I'll bet he's got 3 toilets per house. I'll bet he's got 4. Frank Thomas had 18 once. The definition of somebody with a house with 18 bathrooms is not rich. It's lazy. But still, say you've got 9 houses. You've probably got 36 toilets. J.B. Pritzker has 2 mansions, and he took out a lot of the toilets.
Well, he put them back in, I'm sure.
Yeah, I bet he did. I bet he did before he sold it anyway, or whatever he did with it. So it's very complicated for me. I'm trying to be an informed citizen. And these guys who have so much money to help me decide who I should vote for have spent a lot of time telling me about the other guy's house and their plumbing.
Which, it might be a union job.
Touché. So I'm sure there are other issues that are as important as these when you're trying to figure out who should represent the state of Illinois. But that's what we're left with right now. There's a fascinating story online today in the Tribune. You know that Vivian Maier lady? Vivian Maier is the street photographer who was a nanny to some wealthy families on the North Shore. She took pictures in other states as well. She was in New York, but she's known as the nanny in Chicago who took street photography. And nobody really knew about her stuff. Most of her negatives were never even printed until after she passed away. And then this guy in Peoria got his hands on them at an auction and lo and behold started to develop them and realized that he really had a treasure trove here. Her estate is now valued in the millions of dollars. But the question is, who really is the rightful heir to Vivian Maier's photographs? Even though you can go right now to the Art Institute of Chicago or other bookstores and get books with her now published works, if you will, some of the proceeds from that have to go to, in fact, my understanding is most of the proceeds from those actually have to go to an account that will eventually go to whoever they decide gets the money. But the question is then, all right, who's related to Vivian Maier? She never married. She had a half-brother. And does she have any other sort of siblings or cousins or aunts and uncles? So they've spent a lot of time dissecting her family tree. And it goes back to France and the Austro-Hungary. How do you say it?
Austro-Hungarian.
Them. And Europe. Maybe the same thing there. And the parts of the United States. And so they're like trying to, and when they start to look up the records, they're in multiple languages, hand scrawled on all notes. But they did this to find out who is ultimately related to Vivian Maier. And they say they have 10 people now, 8 on I think her was it father's side and 2 on the mother's side, or the other way around, but 8 and 2. And so now, what do we do with those people? Who are they? That's where the story is now. But there's a story online, and I'm just telling you that it is so fantastically complicated to try and figure. And these are people who don't know her, who never knew her, who didn't know about her,
but are going to now reap the benefits of
her.
And
then someone's going to knock on their door, and you know, it's like in a movie or something, in a board game, where isn't there a Monopoly card where you take the chance card and it says, "Congratulations, a long lost heir has left you $100." Only it's going to be $1 million for some of these people. It's a hell of a story. It's 2:21. This is WGN.
But you keep complaining, and every time that you go, you got me so good. You really got me so blue. You got me thinking about you, and I do. You really got me. You really got me. You really got me good.
All right, let's pick up some more phone lines, and now we go to Line 4, I think that's Joe. Hey, Joe, this is John. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, the comparison is to, you know, it's funny what you say about the fact that, you know, who's ever got the most toilets. But really, if you really look at it, what Pritzker did is unethical and, in my opinion, illegal to remove the toilets, whether it's 1 or 20 of them, to evade taxes.
The home is uninhabitable.
Versus Rauner.
Yeah.
Pardon?
No, go ahead. You're doing fine.
Versus Rauner, who basically was fighting his taxes and tax rate. I did that and got my taxes reduced. That's completely legal and available to anybody.
Completely legal. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, my only problem with tax relief like that is that members of the Chicago City Council should not be representing you. You know, or people that, you know, maybe have a conflict of interest. That's more what's happened with members of the Chicago City Council and the Trump Tower. But if a rich person wants to get their taxes reduced and they do so legally, more power to them. Nobody should be paying more than they should be paying, right?
Right, right. Well, I did it. I did it. And, my taxes went down a couple thousand dollars just because I argued and, you know, came up with evidence and, you know, I mean, it was a completely legal process versus if you take all the toilets out to say that your house is inhabitable and it's a $1 million house. Come on. And he got taxes taken away, or he didn't have to pay high taxes on that. That's unethical and illegal. And I think that's the path that he got. He seems to follow. So whether it's 1 or 9 homes or, you know, 9 toilets versus 36 toilets. Yeah. I think there's definitely a conflict between those two.
Yeah,
you know, they're
different.
They're thoughts.
They're different creatures. You're absolutely right. Thanks for the phone call, Joe. I'm glad you're listening.
Sure.
Yeah. Have a good day. I'm glad you got in. Now the governor's going to be on with you know, last time in the last election, which I believe was in November. I'll get back to you on that. We were putting the objects of these ads on, right? So if Jeannie Ives had an ad that said something terrible about Bruce Rauner, we would put Rauner on, play the Ives ad against him, and then ask.
That was only in March. It wasn't even November.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it that recent? Wow. It's all kind of a fog, Steve. It seems like we can't get out of these cycles. But I'm telling you what, he's got so many toilets, they're just piled up on his lawn. I'll bet if you go by J.B. Pritzker's house right now, you'll just see a pile of toilets there. Because it's that way in the TV commercial. Maybe Violetta could drive by there later on and take a look at it. She's kind of in the traffic department.
Yeah, sure, I'll do that.
Up next is Daniel.
You think there's a bunch of dogs out there?
Dogs? No, I said toilets.
I know, going to the bathroom.
Oh, well, I think they're for human use. You're thinking of fire hydrants, aren't you? Would a dog walk up and use it that way, too? Daniel, you're on the air. Hello. What can I do for you?
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. And I'd like to start off by saying that only in Illinois will toilets become political fodder.
I know. You know, it's not like we have anything serious to worry about. So let's pick our president.
We're doing great.
Our governor that way, yeah.
I just wanted to call in and touch base. There's a website called opensecrets.org that tracks political donations, and it tracks the top 100 political donations and who donated it and what percentage went to each party, and actually Ask Me is on that list, and for the 2016 election cycle they're number 28, and it's just kind of weird because you look on here, they donated roughly $15.6 million to Democrats and $7,475 to Republicans. So it is Republican. I mean, it is very heavily favored in the Democrat side. But it's actually kind of a neat little website. It's really good.
OpenSecrets.org.
And it says top organizational contributors. It's really fascinating. It has data for the last several election cycles.
I'm glad you called. I'll look into that.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Yeah, you betcha. In fact, the head of the local Ask Me union is going to join us in a little bit, and I'll ask her if this is going to make them rethink their alignment with one party or the other. Ron, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. John, I'm sorry, but I have to take this all the way back to why we lost this last decision in the Supreme Court. And it's got to go back to President Obama. I'm sorry. But he did not back the people who put him in office. He did not back the unions. He did not give them car check, which would have given them more membership, which showed his power, which would have maybe gave him more votes. He did not back Chicago Teachers Union, who overwhelmingly supported him. The people who put him in office, Acorn, they were thrown out of business by a lie.
Hold on, though. I get it. I respect your right to not like Barack Obama, but this is a Supreme Court decision that said. Right, it was a First Amendment issue. Ultimately, they said that your dollars don't have to go to an organization whose voice you don't support. I don't know that Barack Obama made that happen, right?
Yeah, he did, John. By him being the president and not having the power to make decisions that put Democrats in office, whether statewide or he lost regular courts, he lost federal courts. And he lost the Supreme Court. It definitely falls on his head.
Okay. Barack Obama did not get a chance to appoint his last Supreme Court justice.
Well, no,
nominee.
He did. No, he did.
I know, Steve.
Okay.
I know. How'd that work out for him, Steve?
Well, no, but I mean, the point is he did do it. He did nominate someone.
It's 2:30. Steve's going to do the news. Afterwards, we'll just say hello to the... I just threw the piece of paper away with the... My next guest's name on it. I want to make sure I get this right. Here it is. Yeah, Roberta Lynch is going to join us. She is the director of Ask Me Local 31. We'll talk to her about her side of that. We started the show talking to Mark Janis. He was elated. I'll bet she won't be. We have got more texts coming into the show today than we have in a very long time. That's right, four. No, it's pages and pages of texts. These issues have really animated you today, and why not? 53% of the public sector employees in the Chicago area are represented by a union. 15% of employees in the Chicago area are represented by a union. Illinois is very much a union state, and Chicago is still a union town. Not as much as it used to be, but there are evidently a lot of people who still feel, or maybe are forced, to enjoy the benefits of a union. But that may change now with this Supreme Court ruling, 5-4. Mark Janis and friends said, we don't want to pay union dues if we don't want to. He didn't want to, and now they say he doesn't have to. Roberta Lynch is on a phone line. She joins us on WGN Radio once again. Roberta, it's John Williams. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hi, John. Glad to be with you.
I'm glad you were able to take our call. I suspect you're busy today, too. You are the
director
of Ask Me 31. So what does that mean, Ask Me 31? Where are you? Who all are you?
Well, we're a national union here in Illinois. We go from one end of the state to the other, and we represent a wide array of public service workers in the city of Chicago and Springfield and downstate Marion and all the way over in the Metro East area. And it could be anything from a public defender in Cook County to a sanitation worker in Evanston to a public health worker in the city of Chicago to a state employee doing public assistance in Springfield. So it's a very, very wide, diverse group of public employees, public service workers who are affected by this court decision today.
You surprised by the decision?
I can't say that I was. We anticipated it, given the way the rulings from the majority on this court have been issuing. So, of course, we're extremely disappointed, but not surprised.
So what do you think happens next?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, this decision is very much tilts the playing field even further in favor of the wealthy and powerful. From the very beginning, it was about one thing and one thing only: wealthy special interests like Bruce Rauner and the Illinois Policy Institute trying to tip the scales even further in favor of big corporations and the wealthy. In fact, I would note that you said Mark Janus and his friends who bought the suit, but actually his only friend who bought the suit was Bruce Rauner. It was Bruce Rauner and Mark Janus, essentially. And as you probably know, Rauner originated the suit, and then the federal court threw him out, said he didn't have standing to bring it. They looked for tens of thousands of union members in the state government. They found exactly one who wanted to pursue this lawsuit, and that was Mark Janus. And I think the reason for that is very simple, which is actually unions are viewed more favorably today than at any time in recent years. As you know, everyone from graduate students to journalists to airline workers, and people have been joining unions over and over again over the last few years, and of course for many years going back in time. So I think that workers want unions, and they recognize that coming together and being able to stand together and have a voice on the job and in our wider society increases their standard of living, improves their standard of living, makes their jobs safer. You know, we're talking about firefighters, teachers, correctional officers, nurses. We represent employees.
I understand all of that, and I think, and I, if I may, Roberta, I think our listeners do too. That's not what the case pivoted on. That's not what this was all about. That's not why the Supreme Court said that you don't have to pay union dues. They, as I understand it, said that you don't have to, in part because maybe you don't agree with the politics of it and you're subsidizing somebody else's political views, their speech about that.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to remember, John, that this issue was litigated. It was before the court 4 decades ago with a unanimous Supreme Court, a less politicized Supreme Court, a Supreme Court that valued the principles on which our country was founded. And that was the court that established the very idea of fair share fees, which you're pointing to. And the whole premise of a fair share fee, as it's been working for decades, is that if you don't agree with the political views of the union, then we have to calculate how much money does the union spend on political candidates, contributions, et cetera, and that amount is deducted from
right.
what you pay.
Roberta,
and that's the system that was in place.
And people see that, including Antonin Scalia, they see that as a shell game, that you're at the end of the day, you cannot separate unions that donate their money largely to Democrats. You cannot separate these unions from their politics. And if I am putting money just in that one pool, not for political purposes, but only, say, for wages and benefits, It's still subsidizing the union's effort overall. At the end of the day, it is a political organization.
Well, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you could say everybody's a political organization in some form or another, but when we're at the bargaining table, you know, we're not thinking about who are we going to elect at the next election. We're talking about how can we improve the wages of the people that we represent.
Well, is it just a coincidence?
When we're representing a worker in a workplace who has been wrongly fired, we're not talking about, gee, can we unelect their employer? We're talking about, through a legal system, how can we help that person get their job back?
Well,
when we're
Hold on 1 second. I want to make sure my news friends in the WGN radio newsroom, including Steve Bertrand, get a chance to chime in here. Steve, did you have a question too?
Roberta, so we're talking about, so now you have to provide to Mark Janis and others all the benefits that union members get, even though they don't contribute anything, not only not dues, but the fair share payments, right? So all That's benefits. Right. Does that include health care, or is the health care a separate union policy?
Yeah, because that's very different depending on unions. Our union does not provide health care benefits. So we bargain with an employer, and the employer is actually the one who administers the health plan.
So is there anything?
Yes, to answer your question, the person would still get health care. You're absolutely right, Stephen, what you're pointing to, which is that someone could be paying absolutely nothing. They would be in a workplace. Their coworkers would be contributing, and their coworkers would be paying toward the cost, but that person who pays nothing, like Mark Janis, that's what he wants to do. He wants to pay nothing, but he never once said, hey, can I give back the pay raise the union negotiated?
So is there anything,
can I give back the health care benefits the union negotiated?
We know, Roberta,
I don't mean to keep interrupting you, Roberta, but I just want to get to the question. So is there anything that paying union members will get or receive any benefit that those who decide to pay you nothing won't get it?
Not really, no. I mean,
aren't you worried people are going to stop paying you?
Well, because I think most people have enough common sense to know that if the union didn't have any money, it couldn't accomplish all the things that it has accomplished. Workers accomplish things by standing together, and that means contributing together.
Roberta,
and most people, that's simple common sense.
All right, but my understanding is, though, that you have to, by law in Illinois, extend those same benefits to the non-dues-paying members. Is that correct?
Are we back to John now? Because I can't see you guys.
I'm with a deeper, more resonant voice.
He's the smarter one, Roberta.
Okay. So I'm not going to accept that, Steve. So, John, you know, just think about it. Yes, we do. But why would someone pay? Because they have. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm too much of a common sense person. That's how I've always operated. But I just think anybody would realize, you know, we had to take cases to court all the time. Bruce Rauner is trying to drive down wages, withhold increases that people were promised. We had to go to the court to be able to resolve that issue. How does the union pay for things like that?
No.
Every member contributes. There's nobody in the sky contributing.
No, you got to let me finish this point, Roberta. Hold on.
If you're a represented employee and you don't contribute and Steve doesn't contribute and whoever else is there with you in the studio doesn't contribute, pretty soon there's no money and we all can't progress anymore.
I appreciate the quandary that puts you in. You have to extend, and I've got part two of this, you have to extend to non-dues paying members the same benefits that the other people are paying for, and it's mandated. How about if in Illinois then, because of this, you guys ask a legislator to write a law that says that we no longer have to extend the same privileges and benefits to non-dues paying members. If you don't want to pay union dues, fine, but now you do not, the employer does not have to give you the same salary.
Yeah, we don't think that's a good idea. I mean, look, this is the whole purpose of this case for Bruce Rauner is to weaken the labor movement.
You don't want to do that.
The voices of working people, this is what they're trying to do, and what you just described is part of their strategy. They're for that because they want to divide workers against each other. They want us to say, oh, the minute you have any doubts, let's throw you out. No, I think the minute you have any doubts, let's sit down and talk with you because I don't believe that most people are going to want to stop paying dues. I think most people want a strong union, and they know that you don't have anything that's strong and effective unless you're contributing, unless it has the resources to be able to do the job.
I'm out of time, Roberta. A last statement from you. I've cut you off a couple of times here. I don't like to, but we've got a lot of ground to cover. Is there anything else you want our listeners to hear?
No, I think the most important thing to say is that unions are going to continue to thrive. No court is going to stop us. We're a movement, and I think that working people in this country want and need that movement to balance against corporate power and the power of the super rich. And I think that you're going to see that whatever changes come, and I'm sure there will be some, there's still going to be strong unions in this country going forward.
Roberta Lynch is the director of Ask Me Local 31. I really appreciate your time. Good luck to you over there, Roberta.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks for your time. We started with Mark Janis in the show today. Just after the 1 o'clock news, he gave a different view on that. Are you going to use the phrase today, elections have consequences?
No. No.
That's so easy.
It's too easy.
It sounds so smart when we say that.
Yeah. I've been hearing people say it forever and ever and ever. I do just love the great hypocrisy and irony of American politics where, you know, good for the goose, good for the gander. We just keep going back and forth whether it's good policy or not.
Yeah.
There's a couple of, first of all, I want to talk about, I just heard you mention unions and the union decision here for Illinois, for the nation now, by wow. the Supreme Court, is a fascinating one. Bert Odelson, one of the great, one of the most interesting attorneys in Chicago, I think. And that's saying something, because this town is just, you know, it's got a lot of them.
Well, he understands the rules in a way that no one else does. So love hearing from him.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, we don't always play by the rules in this area, but you need to know what they are.
He's a gigantically important election attorney, but he also has some thoughts on what this, what the union situation means here moving forward in Illinois. So, and around the country, but obviously Illinois, one of the most unionized states in the country.
Absolutely.
So it's
and that was an Illinois-based case that launched the Supreme Court decision.
Right. So he's got some thoughts on that.